The numbers told the story. They always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Good Tuesday morning to you. It is a numbers game at Visa, the sports betting network, Visa.com, the Visa app, Game Plus, iHeartRadio, YouTube TV, all proudly brought to you by BetMGM. It's Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin in the hizzy. How you doing, man? You good?
Pretty good. I missed Monday Night Football. Was it any good last night?
I was going to be my line. Did I miss anything last night that we should know about? This, you know, I always say October's my favorite month of the sports betting or just the sports calendar period.
Right, because the NHL is getting started.
Right. That's because the NHL is starting. Today might be my favorite day. Four Major League Baseball games, division series begin. We will have baseball guests on, Paul Spohr, Mark Borchardt, Jason Weingarten. They've all got thoughts on this. We'll talk college football with Pete Vutek. Fantasy with Todd Wright. He's got the things to say. A lot of Todd Wright's old staples came in last night. We got to talk to him about the old Todd Wright objection, his old staple. I'll explain that coming up as well. NFL power rankings. We usually just put these on the rundown. We're like, okay, NFL power rankings, no big deal. Kelly, I've never looked more forward to NFL power rankings in my life. And the reason is I have no idea what you're going to pick at four, and I have no idea what you do 6 through 10 anymore. That's how weird this league is.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. 1 through 3 were fine for me.
Well, they're the same every week.
And then it took me about, I don't know, 20 minutes after that of switching around teams. Every time I made one, I was like, wait, no. I got to put this team ahead of them. And we had to go back and change it. So, yeah, it will be interesting to see.
Start with the game last night. My goodness gracious. Probably the most entertaining game of the football season.
Without a doubt.
Certainly prime time. The Chiefs beat the Raiders 30-29. Raiders get the money on the spread. But the Chiefs barely get through for survivors. Raiders led this one 17-0. Coughed up a second 17-point lead this year. The Raiders have lost 4 games. They're 1-4. All 4 by a combined 14 points. They have a minus 5-point differential on the year. Let's do it guessing line style for a second. Raiders, 4th-1. Let's go to the first quarter. Scoreless game. 4th-1 at their own 42. You know you'll get single coverage on Devontae Adams. He just sails by Rashad Fenton, even on an underthrow. 58-yard touchdown, 7-0 Raiders. Chiefs get downfield. Matthew Wright pushes a 41-yard field goal attempt wide. 4:07 left first quarter. Subsequent Raiders drive. Not one, but 2 defensive PI flags on underthrown Derek Carr passes intended for Devontae Adams. 1 on Fenton, 1 on Jalen Watson. Best play in the NFL, Kelly. Just throw it up there. Underthrow it. Leads to a Josh Jacobs 1-yard score, 14-0. KC, 3-and-out. 4th-1 at the KC, 34 on the Raiders' subsequent drive. 9:27 left second quarter. They're up 14-0. They opt for a Daniel Carlson 53-yard field goal. It's his 36th in a row. 8 off the record, 17-0. Were you upset with the Raiders for settling for the field goal there?
No, I was okay with that one.
I was too. Then the Chiefs finally get on the board. They have a touchdown drive of their own, culminating in a Mahomes to Kelce 1-yard touchdown pass, 17-7. Ensuing Raiders drive. We're still in the first half. And here it is, Kelly. 3rd-and-8 at the Raiders 46 with 1:13 left in the second quarter. Derek Carr stripped and sacked by Chris Jones, but a roughing the passer penalty is called on Jones for having the audacity to land on Derek Carr. There's nothing else he could have done. Nothing. Referee Carl Sheffer's flagging him for playing football. Here's what Chris Jones had to say about the incident.
So what I'm going to go up to him and say, how should I tackle? How should I not roll on him? I'm trying my best. I'm 325 pounds, okay? What do you want me to do? What do you want me to do? I'm running full speed trying to get the quarterback. I hit the ball. What you want me to do? I brace my hands. So I think it's like taking the initiative to extend to look at roughing the passers now as a league, you know, like they did pass interference a couple years back, where we can view the pass interference. I think that's now the next level we're going to have to take as a league for all these roughing the passers.
I don't even know if we're watching football anymore, as I tweeted last night. And SVP said it best last night. He goes, what are you supposed to suspend the laws of physics? Good old Chris Jones. Smart.
Yeah.
Miami Dolphins, you caused all of this.
They did. I just want to point out real quick, Chris Jones listed at 295 pounds throughout 345 there. So I'm going to use a 50-pound weight fluctuation for myself going forward as well, Gil.
Which would bring you down to?
I'm a solid 220 there, Gil.
So instead of the Chiefs getting the ball back, Raiders keep it. Leads to another Daniel Carlson 50-yarder to put the Raiders up 20-7 with 17 seconds left in the half. But as we know from the AFC playoffs. That's plenty of times for Patrick Mahomes, aided by a face mask call. Could have been a horse collar call, too, by Roderick Teamer on Jerick McKinnon. Sets up a 59-yard field goal from Matthew Wright as the clock goes to zero, and Matthew Wright sinks it. 20-10, we go to the break.
That felt huge at the time.
Monumental momentum swing.
Yep.
Felt massive. By the way, everybody was betting Chiefs minus 7.5 based on that going into the second half at halftime, and it all got home.
Well, I didn't even ask you. Did you bet them live? Because I did.
I bet the Raiders plus 3.5 live. That somehow got home,
too. Oh, good for you. I was on the Chiefs. I bet Chiefs money line in the second quarter.
4-1 now on Wes and Femi show with the in-game. All right.
Good for you, man.
Well, you know, try to throw in bets on their show. All right, opening drive, second half. Chiefs matriculated 75 yards. All that momentum, if you believe in such things, coming home. Short touchdown pass from Mahomes to Kelce. It's 20-17, 9:25 left of the third quarter. You could feel the whole world shifting in this game. Then a total makeup call. Here was the thing about the second half. The entire second half, not the entire, but most of the second half, felt like it was an entire makeup call fest because of the roughing the passer penalty that was called on Jones. Total makeup call where Mac Hollins is called for a pick, an offensive PI on first down, kills the Raiders' drive before it even starts. Chiefs get the ball back, matriculate 57 yards. Mahomes to Kelce again for the third time from 8 out. Chiefs lead for the first time, 24-20. But the Raiders on a drive that spanned the end of the third, the beginning of the fourth, largely on Josh Jacobs' runs, then settle for a Carlson 47-yarder, his 38th straight. 24-23, KC, 14:05 left. Subsequent drive. Chiefs, Matthew Wright misses on a 37-yard field goal try, and you're like, wow, Raiders are going to get the ball back down one. And then Kelly, instead of the Raiders ball down one, a phantom holding call on Malcolm Kuntz. And I don't know who the referee consultant or authority is that Buck and Aikman brought in, but he's like, yeah, you could see him hold so that Matthias Farley can get to. None of that happened. That's not what happened.
You're talking on the kick?
On the field goal.
Yeah.
Where they threw the flag for holding? What was that? They did not make enough of that, dude.
I can't remember ever or the last time I've seen that called. Right? They threw that flag, and I'm like, what's coming on the defense here?
We are,
right? Like, unless it's roughing or something.
We are betting on this stuff. We are mashugana for betting on this stuff, Yiddish. Like, I can't, what are we, they can do anything they want.
I'm trying to think, like, we've seen multiple times the jump over the long snapper
yes.
thing called, right? I was like, when they called that last time, I'm like, defensive holding? I'm like, what? I did see the replay later on. I guess I get it.
I don't. I saw the replay 10 times.
I don't know if I knew that was a rule.
I don't get it at all. I have no idea where they saw that. Four plays later, Mahomes to Kelce for a fourth time, 30-23. Up 7, the Chiefs go for 2, they fail. Did you like them going for 2?
Love
up 7?
The call.
I do too. And again, for those who are like, you know, want to know the analytics about it, if you assume, just take a general thing, if you assume the expected points on an extra point is 1, because you make most of those, not so much anymore, but let's assume that for the purpose of this conversation, 50% on 2-point conversions, the expected value also 1 point. And if you take in the fact that these are the Kansas City Chiefs, they're probably higher on the 2-point conversion rate, success rate, than others. I think you try to make it 2 scores at that point than 1. So I get that. Next drive, car to Devontae for 48. It's 30-29. The Raiders decide to go for 2 with 4:27 left. Did you like that?
Love it.
I did, too.
I loved both of them.
Now, this one's a little harder to sort of wrap your brain around.
Okay, you're right. I loved the Chiefs ones.
I loved the Chiefs.
I liked this one.
I would agree with that assessment.
And mainly from the side of, look, it's Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs. You're in a tough stadium to play on the road, Monday Night Football. Go in there and try to steal a win, right? To steal a win in Kansas City.
You're Sugar Ray Leonard stealing the round from Marvin Hagler. That's mm-hmm. exactly what you thought too, Kelly. That was the analogy you came up with. No, I'm kidding. No, that's what you're doing. You're just trying to steal it right there.
Yeah.
Go up, make one stop. By the way, the Raiders did make a stop after that.
Right, yeah.
People are going to disagree with that, but I think reasonable minds could disagree there. So the Raiders seemingly get that miraculous stop on D. They start with the ball at their own 6 with 2:29 left. They have the 2-minute warning and 1 timeout left to try to win this. All they need is a Daniel Carlson field goal. He never misses. Raiders smartly call 2 running plays before the 2-minute warning to get the ball out to the 23, 9 yards on first down. Then Chris Jones on a second down gets held. That's not flagged.
Oh, but that was...
Chris Jones is getting the worst of it.
I have a bigger problem with that call, missed call, than I think anything else.
The makeup calls stopped, and they went against Chris Jones again.
That was the most mind-blowing, obvious holding I've ever seen in the NFL without a flag throw.
Didn't throw a flag. By the way, Patrick Mahomes got swung down on a play previous to that. That didn't get flagged.
That one too. I have a problem with that and the non-holding call more than I have with the roughing the passer.
So third and one, it left the Raiders third and one. They converted. Three plays later, it's another third and one. 51 seconds left. Carr to Devontae ruled a 16-yard catch on the field with a toe tap. Correctly reversed, I think.
I think. I was talking with the guys downstairs about this, too.
People are like, oh, yeah, it was definitely reversed. I don't know.
Okay.
He shifted from two hands to one. Did he really lose control?
So, and how I saw it, Gil, is if we have all these one-handed catches in the NFL these days, right? He had one hand underneath it. That ball didn't bobble. All he did was bring it back into his chest. I don't know. I think.
I don't know. I think. Fourth and one, 47 seconds left. Carr goes deep. Renfro and Adams run into each other, and the Chiefs win 30-29.
And then I also didn't see a replay ever. When everybody was like, oh, it was great press coverage at the line of scrimmage on Devontae Adams. I'm like, well, that would make sense. But I never saw a replay of that.
I have so much more to say about the NFL. Because the takeaway from that game is nothing. The Chiefs are who we thought they were, and the Raiders are who we thought they were. But like
the greatest 1-4 football team ever.
They are. Again, four losses by a combined 14 points. There's other things we didn't even mention on guessing lines with referees, which we'll have to get to as well. Paul Spohr next on baseball, though. Quadruple header today. It's a numbers game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app, BetMGM Sports. BetMGM with all your favorite wagering options along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and much more. Download the BetMGM app today and stop by any MGM casino on the strip with your state-issued ID to open an account. Start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Must be 21 or older and physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. Gambling problem, call 1-800-522-4700. Gil Alexander, Kelly Bidlin, Paul Spohr standing by to talk baseball. Just wanted to clarify what we were saying there at the end. I think, and I don't want to speak for you, but we're both okay with the fact that that the Devontae Adams 16-yard play on third and one on the final drive was reversed.
Yes.
But I just feel like they were so dismissive of it that I'm like, wait a minute. Everything we've been told about catches where he's shifting from one hand to two, I'm not so okay, but like maybe it was. Like I think it was a correct call. I'm not sure.
I think it was too. But I think the better reminder is we've been arguing this whole weekend of now we don't know what roughing the passer is.
Yes.
We still don't know what a catch is.
We still don't know what a catch is. Let me just bring up one thing. When we did guessing lines yesterday, we're super duper thorough. Yesterday we had a bit of a time crunch, and the one game where I skimped on that I had more to talk about was the New Orleans game. We didn't bring this up. Chris Olave on a play where he got hurt in a scary way. Chris Olave caught what they called a touchdown. Kelly, how long have we been watching this football league, the National Football League, where you're supposed to finish the catch? How was that a catch?
Completely agree with you. I feel like this is something we've seen more the past two seasons, this season and last season, where they do, especially in the end zone, where it's, okay, as soon as you get 2 feet down, you're fine. And I don't get that because I thought it was we have to control it to the ground, right? Where he lost control. And we've seen it a couple of times this year. There was one in the field of play, man. There was a big play earlier in the year. I can't remember who it was now. Where they called the same thing. But it looks far weirder when it's actually in the field of play and not in the end zone.
We're betting on this stuff, man.
Betting on this.
Ladies and gentlemen, baseball has no problems with officiating and umpiring. That's for sure. Let's bring in Paul Spohr to talk about the division series, which all begin today. What a day. Arguably the best baseball day of the year, although there are four huge favorites, I should point that out. It's Paul Spohr, everybody. Paul Spohr, at Spohr, S-P-O-R-E-R, Sleeper of the Bus podcast, Fangraphs, of course, and twitch.tv/Spohr. How you doing, Paul?
Gil, I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Let me just talk about this, and then we'll transition to today's games. But game two of the Mets-Padres series, and I bet the Padres game one, game two, game three, first five, game three, Padres series, but game two, which they lost, Chris Guccione was behind home plate, and okay, I did have the Padres, full disclosure. But have you ever seen a postseason game where an umpire, and I don't want to be prisoner at the moment because maybe you have, but good God, he was giving Jacob DeGrom strikes off the plate, and Blake Snell would be dead center. He'd be like, nah, I'm sorry. It's a ball. Come on,
man. It was kind of the old school, like, where you earn it or whatever, and you can earn extra inches. No, you should just – the strike zone, right? You know, is that thing like, okay, Snell's walking, guys, so even his close ones aren't going to go his way. No, again, just call it straight up, and this is the sort of stuff that the robot umps will quell, which is, like – somebody who's struggling early with command can get back in it if they are throwing, you know, textbook strikes. And just because somebody's doing well early doesn't mean they get to keep inching out further and further. Obviously, the number one example is always Eric Gregg with Levon Hernandez. But I bet you could find tens upon tens of Braves playoff games from the 90s where they're getting obscene zones. Because those guys lived off obscene zones. And I don't say that to denigrate them. Glavin, Maddox, and Smoltz were brilliant. They also got help too, right? To reach that level, like, they were getting strike zones that were comical and that would never be called. But yeah, I was actually at a concert festival, so I came back to it all on Twitter, seeing how crazy it was. I had the AirPod in, you know, all day with radio versions on of games. But by that point, I think that game was at night. It was getting a little too loud to hear what was going on in the game. So I read it on Twitter about Guccione.
The Levon Hernandez 97. Florida Marlins. If you ever go back and watch that footage, Kelly smiling because he's down. It's just comical. All right, let's begin chronologically.
Rest in peace, Eric Gregg, but that was crazy.
Let's begin chronologically today. It begins with the Phillies and the Braves, game one in Atlanta. These are best of fives, everybody. So we'll talk about the series price. We'll talk about the game one price. Now, game one price here, it's Ranger Suarez against Max Fried. The Braves are minus 200 in this game. The Braves are similarly priced for the series. What do you make of this game? What do you make of this series?
I'm a little torn here. Obviously, I think you can make a case for every team. I said that back in the wild card there. I think every team is live here. So to see all these mega favorites today is a little bit interesting. Obviously, it's just for a game one situation.
It is interesting, yeah.
But, you know, they're all so big right now, and I think a couple of these teams could absolutely win today. I look at this Phillies club, and I think about a few things. One, they got to find a way to not let the defense hurt them. Obviously, that's been a big problem all year. Suarez is going to need to find some of his best strikeout stuff. You do not want the ball in play with that defense. Meanwhile, they're pretty good. They, being the Phillies, are pretty good against lefties. This is not a bad spot for them to maybe get home field advantage back and steal the first game. I really think they've got an opportunity today. It's going to come down to Suarez being solid for them, and obviously the offense taking advantage of Fried, which is not easy. Even though they're good against lefties, I don't know how well they've done against Fried this year, but they are fourth in WOBA against lefties, are the Phillies. However, the Braves are second. So we could see a little bit of an offensive explosion here, even though we have two good pitchers going. You got an over-under of 7.5. Maybe the over is the play if you're going to go anywhere here. But if I'm going on a team side, I'm kind of looking Philly for this game here just because the number's so rich. And I think they've got a real shot here. These division matchups, I think, could go any way as far as the series goes, too.
Wow. These are 2-2-1s also in terms of home field. And they're crunched up at the back end. So you could, like, travel and going into a game five, if it comes to that. All right, game two today. It's the Mariners and the Astros. The Mariners sweeping the Blue Jays. Phillies, by the way, sweeping the Cardinals. Phillies with an amazing comeback in game one in the ninth against the Cardinals. Mariners had their own even more amazing comeback, one might argue, down 8-1 against the Blue Jays in game two. But it is the presumptive Cy Young Award winner, Justin Verlander, going up against Logan Gilbert. The Astros are minus 210 in this game. They're also a big favorite. Excuse me, minus 210 we're showing in this game. They're also a big favorite in the series, obviously, and the total in this one is 6.5 today.
Well, you're going to have a hard time ever finding me really go against Verlander, but if I'm going aside, I think I'm going Seattle here. I really like this ball club. What they did in Toronto was amazing. Thought they had a great shot to win the series. Didn't know they'd come back from 8-1 to get the second game and pull a little sweep. But this is a quality team, and I really do think they have an opportunity to match well here with Houston. They have very strong pitching on both the starting side and the bullpen. They have a good enough lineup to compete. Obviously, it's going to come down to how well that lineup can play against these Astros pitchers, and Verlander's an absolute stud. Big time in the playoffs often as well. So probably laying off a side, but if I'm going to go anywhere, it is going to be with Seattle because I like them. I like them for the series for sure, if I'm betting it. Houston, and it, what's funny about that is it always comes down to numbers, right? Because Houston is my World Series winner, because if I'm just trying to pick the winner, that's what I'm picking. But when I look at things and the way the numbers break down, I see Seattle as such a live dog that if I'm going to play this series, I'm going to get down on Seattle there.
Well, I have actually made a bet on the final two here today. By the way, Astros minus 225 to minus 245, series favorite, somewhere in there. But I've made bets on the final two series, both on the dogs, on the Guardians and the Padres. First, it's Quantrill against Cole today, the Guardians and the Yankees, game number one. I took the Guardians at plus 192. Cole is minus 225 in this ballgame, or we're showing minus 200. Shop around for these. The total is 7. Guardians plus 180 on the comeback here. What do you think on game one, Quantrill versus Cole?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm leaning Cleveland because I'm with Cleveland on the series here big time. Unlike the Phillies and Mariners where I'm saying, you know, big number, understand that they can win, I'm picking Cleveland to win here. I think this is a high-quality team that is still undervalued in the market. I understand why this game is where it's at with Cole versus Quantrill. If they can get a couple homers off Cole, though, that's his bugaboo. That's what really gets him. When he's off, it's usually home run related. Couple early homers, can see Quantrill settling in, get to that bullpen. And I do like the dynamic of Quantrill. You know, he's kind of a soft tossing contact sort of guy. And then they go to fireballers in their bullpen. So it's a big change once he is out of the game after 5, 6, maybe 7 innings. Obviously, he'd have to be rolling to go 7 here in a playoff spot. He's a guy that's really tough for the fantasy and analytical community too, because nothing really adds up with what he's doing. And then you watch him and you're like, okay, he keeps guys off balance and, you know, he induces weak contact with Quantrill. How bankable is that stuff, though? And like I was saying earlier with Suarez, you don't want the ball in play, not because Cleveland's defense is bad, whereas Philly's is, but you just don't want the ball in play as much as you can in general in the playoffs. And that's the one worry with Quantrill. But I love Cleveland in the series, so I'm with you there.
Yeah, I took Cleveland, and I took the Padres. It's Clevinger versus, for the series, that is. It's Clevinger versus Urias. Julio Urias, maybe the most, he's invisible. Maybe the most impressive two-year stats of any pitcher in baseball.
Yes.
No one ever talks about him. Dodgers minus 250 for the, you know, somewhere around minus 220 to minus 250 for the game today. Similarly priced for the series, real quick, 10 seconds. What are you thinking here?
I'm going with the Dodgers, but again, I think all of these divisional ones, the underdogs are super live, and I understand the Clevinger pick for today. Urias, though, like you said, super underrated. I think he's going to dominate, so I'm against you on that one today, Gil. Sorry.
Well, I'm on the Guardians of the Padres for series. I haven't bet the games yet. Yeah.
Okay.
We'll come back. Thank you, Paul. Appreciate it as always. NFL Power Rankings on the other side. Numbers Game, Visa, the Sports Betting Network.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Basketball season is ready to tip off, and now's the time to grab your VSiN Pro Basketball Betting Guide with season prep on all 30 teams. Our hoops experts, including Jonathan Von Tobel, provide strategy and advice, as well as predictions for conference winners, win totals, playoff teams, and player awards. We also have 5 betting tips for beginning NBA bettors. Give yourself an edge this NBA season to get the VSiN NBA Betting Guide by becoming a VSiN Pro subscriber today at VSiN.com/subscribe. How pumped are you for the NBA, Kelly Bidlin?
So pumped.
We do an, we do an alternate season win totals later this week?
Yeah, we are.
Andre's probably like, yeah, we are.
Yeah, we are. I whatever day we talked about those last week, I went home and looked at them for like 2 hours.
Just staring at them.
Yeah, well, I mean,
betting like, them.
You know, researching them. Yeah. So we got, I definitely got some ones I like, that's for sure.
If the world suddenly woke up tomorrow and there was no such thing as basketball or golf, what would you do with yourself?
That's a great question. Probably start playing a lot more poker again.
We get tweets at Beat of the Book. Always appreciate the feedback. This is from Daytime Degenerate. He says, hey, Gil, when the refs are involved in the rundown, there's a problem. P.S. Mahomes made that gauntlet schedule his biatch.
Yeah,
he's right. Yes, he did. By the way, can we give ourselves a little pat on the back? We were talking about adjusted season win totals last week in the NFC and the AFC. Everything I talked about anyway, at least 1 week through, went our direction. Mm-hmm. So in the AFC, I said, hey, the Chiefs are making this gauntlet schedule easy peasy. They're just rolling through it. They're 4-1. And remember, before the season started, we were like, oh, 7 games. This is the most brutal schedule ever. They're rolling through it. So I was like, Kansas City over. Hasn't adjusted much. And then the other one in the AFC I talked about was also about preseason schedule analysis, where we said the Browns got the easiest first four games. Oh, they rigged it for the Deshaun Watson absence. They knew it would be at least four games. They only made it through two and two, and that didn't change much. You got to go under on that. They lose again this weekend to the Chargers, just like the Chiefs won against the Raiders last night. NFC, by the way, we said Eagles up, Panthers down. Eagles over, Panthers under. So anyway, yes, we always talk about schedule analysis in the offseason, and then we rarely come back to it. But we need to acknowledge, generally, we were wrong about that stuff. New York Mets 16. Gil, I did not see the Olave catch. How did it compare to the touchdown reversal for Green Bay? Oh, he's talking about the Dobbs catch, I believe, against New England. Dobbs never really had it. He didn't come down with it. Olave hit the ground, and then it came out.
Yes.
So, again, that gets back to what you were saying, Kelly, about what they – this is the whole thing with the NFL, too, and this has to do with fumbles through the goal line and all that kind of stuff. The NFL's rules in the end zone are so illogical to me, vis-a-vis the rest of the game. Makes no sense to me.
It doesn't. And there was another one. Man, I'm going nuts right now trying to think of these catches, because I think it was the Saints, and it might even have been Olave earlier in the year, where he was down the sideline and made a catch. And same thing. It was, you know, he takes two steps, but he's kind of stumbling to the ground, hits the ground, ball comes out, and then they call it a catch.
Angriest guy in New Jersey. Exactly correct about the Olave play, and I had the Saints. Let's cut to the video rules guy so we can get it wrong. Very angry. All in all, we appreciate the tweets. Always. Good, bad, indifferent. As long as you're funny, you can murder me. The other thing about the game last night, we should point this out, Devontae Adams facing NFL discipline now.
Yeah.
And potentially even a suspension, they're saying, for shoving a man to the ground. This was a often played video last night. Shoving a guy to the ground after the loss to the Chiefs. For sources, the league is reviewing the situation. Adams did apologize through the media and again on Twitter. Last night, and you know, when you were watching stuff, everyone was like, well, he's a good guy, and he apologized immediately, which is true.
Yeah.
We all like Devontae Adams, but, you know, it was kind of messed up.
Yeah, it was kind of messed up. And he also did, like, I'm sorry, but it was kind of a half-assed apology, too, right, where he's like, the guy jumped out right in front of me.
Oh, I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. He was like, he's like, listen, I was steamed, like, it's all on me, and then this guy jumps out of nowhere, and, like, I shoved him, and then, like, you look at the video, and you're like, no, man, like, he was walking doing his job.
I was talking to Sean McCollum before the show. It felt to me like he was just walking to do the job.
Yeah. It felt like that, and it felt like a, get out of my way, like I'm angry.
Yeah.
I don't want to blame him too much, because, look, we've seen worse than that, and,
yes,
and people not realize it right away.
Yeah.
And he at least realized he did something wrong.
He did, so give him that much.
I'll give him that much. But I was telling Sean before the show, I'm like, it would have been nicer to see him do that immediately. I think most humans, like, even when they're upset, if you do something like that, it's like, oh, wait, I just screwed up. Like, hey, buddy. I mean, it looked like a 23-year-old kid trying to do audio on the sideline or something.
You ready to do some NFL power rankings?
Let's do it. Fire it up.
I can't wait.
Plug it in.
Old school. Plug it in. Oh, wow. That was very exciting.
Yeah.
I thought there was more to that. All right. So here's the deal. And this is what, again, power rankings don't usually, like, I'm like, I can't wait to see this. This is one of the strangest, and I do not feel like I'm being prisoner of the moment for this. This is one of the strangest beginnings to an NFL season, because I think the same three teams are my same 3-1-2-3. The Bills are still number one after they just destroy the Pittsburgh Steelers. And again, the Bills only lost when they had 14 starters at one point not playing, and they still dominated the box score against the Dolphins. The Chiefs remain number two because that offense could do whatever it wants and is, again, as we talked about, crushing its supposed gauntlet of a schedule the first seven games. Imagine when the schedule gets easier.
Yeah. We're also currently, I don't know about you, but like every other week I'm like, Josh Allen is the greatest quarterback in the NFL. And then, like, a day later, it's Patrick Mahomes is the greatest quarterback in the NFL.
I don't know if you know this.
They're both incredible.
I don't know if you know this, but the two teams play each other this week.
I'm looking forward to
it. And then the Eagles end up number three. They're the only remaining undefeated team in football. And, yes, they did squeak by the Cardinals, but they're still number three. Not going to.
Okay, so we have all three of those in the same order.
Yeah,
okay?
As they should be.
I was going to ask that. Do you think people have a problem with us putting the Eagles third?
Some would, but I don't really care.
Well, I don't care.
They either. Should be three.
I don't care either. And yeah. I think they should be three, but solid I three. Don't think everybody would have them three.
Oh, I think you're 100% right. Not everybody would have them in that order, but I'm very comfortable with that order.
Yeah, me too.
Okay. First, so the two big questions for me are, who do you put at number four? And then what do you do with 6 through 10? Because that's kind of how my tiers work.
I'm kind of cracking up by that because same thing.
Exactly
you're,
the same thing.
You're going to see the same thing on mine. Like, this, we both have the same team at number five. So okay. What?
So I ended up with the 49ers at four. I've had the 49ers in my top 10 the entire year. I have them at number four just because that defense might be epic. And so I still think if I had a pre-flop conviction on them, I have bets for them to win the NFC and the Super Bowl. If that defense is epic, I think they are my number four. The Ravens are number five. You have the Ravens five, too. I don't know yet who you have at four. Yeah. But the Ravens are five because, again, the two losses they've had, they squandered huge leads. I still think they're the fifth best team in football. Now, we can quibble with that. But here's where it's like, I mean, what do you do with the rest here?
Yeah.
So now I have the Dolphins at six because I gave them a pass. They lost the game to the Bengals on a short turnaround. Tua got concussed. Then Teddy Bridgewater got knocked out the very first play. Knocked out, by the way. That's another thing, right? Really? Knocked out of that game on the first play from scrimmage. So I didn't drop the Dolphins too much. I gave them that out. So I made them six. The Chargers, who like the Niners I've had the entire season in the top 10 and I've had pre-flop conviction on, I have them at seven. But I get it. It's, you know, they could be an awful football team in the end, too. If Brandon Staley doesn't mess things up, they might end up with, or if he does mess things up. So I have them at seven. Because who else am I putting there? The Cowboys end up number eight for me because that defense is epic.
Okay, so and that's the biggest, when we get to mine. Like, okay. That was the biggest jump. Like, we both didn't have them even ranked last week.
They just.
We weren't sold on them yet.
Yes.
Clearly we needed 5 weeks, but we're sold after 5 weeks.
They were just out. I put them in. And then I have the Rams at nine because they can't be this bad, right? And then I have the Bucks at 10, who I don't think are very good. But literally 6 through 10, I wouldn't quibble with anything you said. Let's go to yours.
Yeah. 1, 2, 3 remain the same. At number four, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for me. So that is the team. Me and you basically have the 49ers and Bucks basically flipped.
And I'm always underrating them and guessing lines, too. Yeah, I am low on the Bucks.
I still think it's a team that we have not seen that full offense yet because those wide receivers have been so in and out of the lineup that I'm not going to blame what we've seen that how we've seen that offense play so far. I still think they have an elite level defense. Kind of a lot of what you said about the 49ers, right? It's okay if this defense can be this good. I think they're still up there. Ravens 5, Cowboys. I jumped all the way up to 6, Gil, because I think a lot of what you said of who do you put at 6?
Yeah.
Well, this team as an entirety of a team, I think, has been the most impressive of all those other teams remaining. So put them at 6. Chargers, kind of same thing as you. Look, is Brandon Staley maybe going to get in his own way by the end of things? Yeah, he might.
Yep.
Very well might. But that team is one of the most talented rosters in the NFL. So I have them at 7. 49ers move up to 8 for me this week. Can't take anything away from them, but the injuries are concerning to me. I still have the Vikings 9. I put the Bengals in at 10. I went back and forth between Dolphins and Bengals.
Vikings and Bengals are right outside of my top 10. The point of this exercise this week, which made it so interesting, is there's clearly three teams above the fray. I don't know who you put at 4. And then after 5, it falls off a cliff. It's
like throw them all up
in the air.
Yeah.
My friend Rez is not going to be happy that you didn't have the Dolphins in your top 10. I'm sure I'm about to get a text. Fantasy next with Todd Wright, and really a chance to have implemented the Todd Wright objection. We'll explain next.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Attention, BetMGM customers. Have a friend who loves sports as much as you do? Well, here's a chance for both of you to earn a $50 bonus when they sign up through BetMGM's Refer a Friend program. Just sign into your BetMGM account and click on the Refer a Friend program to send your friend a message inviting them to register a new account in the same state that you use BetMGM in. Once your friend signs up, makes a deposit, they'll receive a $50 bonus. And once your friend places a bet with their bonus and the wager is settled, you'll receive a $50 bonus as well. Share the excitement at BetMGM and get a $50 bonus. Visit BetMGM.com for terms and conditions. Must be 21 years of age or older to wager. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards issued as non-withdrawable site credit. Site credit expires in 30 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Promotional offer not available in Mississippi and Nevada. Every time this gentleman comes on, I always refer to him as the greatest radio host there ever was. I am being sincere about it. And one of the reasons is because he had little staples on his show that I thought were pretty clever and in some cases very applicable to what happened on the football field and in other sports. But really, no better time to bring him in from the Todd Wright Football or the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast. And, of course, the Todd Wright Toddcast. It's Todd Wright joining us. How you doing, Todd?
Good morning, Gil Alexander. Nice to be with you again.
Nice to be with you. I am, of course, referring to the Todd Wright Objection, which I will love for you to explain because, boy, were there opportunities to use it this weekend.
Yeah, specifically, let me just highlight the Falcons-Bucks game where Arthur Smith, in my opinion, could have been the first to use the Todd Wright Objection based on the Grady Jarrett roughing the passer call on Tom Brady, which essentially ended the game 3 minutes early. So the Todd Wright Objection would be Arthur Smith pulls his entire team off the field. He sends them into the locker room. The referee comes over and says, what are you doing? I need players out here. Because the referee cannot allow a team to snap the ball if the other team doesn't have at least 10 on the field. We saw that after the Stephon Diggs touchdown against the Saints with that extra point. It's not allowed. And basically, Arthur Smith can say to the referee, you better get on the horn to New York and Goodell. Because if you don't change that bad call and it's not fourth down, we're not playing the last 3 minutes. And that's it.
I love it.
For people that say today and last night, well, you can't go back and play the last 3 minutes of that game. Well, if you pull your team off the field and say we're done, the 3 minutes weren't played. It puts the NFL in a very uncomfortable spot. And as you and I have talked about, Gil, you use it once. That's it. You got one chance to use this and make it count. And that was an example of the Todd Wright Objection. And I would love to see a coach in football or some sport use it someday.
Well, it occurs to me there's going to be a lot of people listening to that be like, come on, that can't happen. But it has happened in soccer. It has happened. So it would be amazing if it happened. But, you know, those kinds of plays. And again, like I said, Todd, people are betting on this stuff. I think there's a lot of people that would love to have seen that, especially in that Atlanta-Tampa Bay game, where you're right, it stopped 3 minutes early. The other thing that I thought about last night was, and this is a big thing with you in fantasy, you eradicated very passionately. By the way, the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast this week, you said, I told you so, and aside of something else, which we'll leave off this list, this broadcast. But last night it reminded me of it. Travis Kelce scores 4 touchdowns. Darren Waller, strains his hamstring, so he can't play. But it triggered this for me. Explain.
One of the things that I talk about often, and I have for years, I've been doing the fantasy podcast now for 7+ years, is how I eliminated mandatory tight ends starting in all my leagues a decade ago. There were simply not enough productive tight ends in the NFL to go around, like there are quarterbacks or running backs or wide receivers or even kickers. And this year, so many owners are struggling with the tight end position. I've given you the solution for 7+ years. Have your commissioner click the box wide receiver tight end flex for a starter and not the mandatory tight end. It is that simple, and it keeps the value of a Travis Kelce or a Mark Andrews in fantasy football, because you have a position to play them, but if you don't have them, you can play a third wide receiver in that spot instead. It's something I solved years ago, and I don't understand why more fantasy owners and commissioners don't cut the cord on the mandatory tight end.
Yeah, there's just not enough good tight ends to go around. I mean, not enough productive tight ends to go around. Make it the flex like Todd Wright. Rule your fantasy league as a commissioner with an iron fist like Todd does, like Khrushchev or Brezhnev. All right, ready to do rapid fire? Ready to do
this?
Yes, I am. One to start. Who you got this week?
Geno Smith. Through 5 weeks, he is the 5th best producing quarterback in fantasy football. Ain't writing back, Gil. 2 or more TDs passing in 4 of his 5 games. Highest completion percentage of starting quarterbacks who have played in all games this year at 75%. Productive wide receivers. A poor defense, so a lot of points needed. Arizona defense this week, he only started in 13% of Yahoo leagues. Last week, you start Geno Smith now.
All right, one to sit. I'm guessing this is more of a reflection of the offense in which he plays than the player himself, right?
Well, and we don't know how much he's playing hurt. I love Najee Harris because of how much he touches the ball, but you got to sit him until further notice. He started in 80% of Yahoo leagues last week. He only has 10 or more points in one of five games this year. Pickett threw the ball 52 times last week. They have the Bucs run defense this week. I think you just wait out Najee Harris until further notice.
Bench him. Don't cut him. That's one to sit. How about one to cut? And this gentleman is in, you said 91% of Yahoo leagues, rostered in 91% of Yahoo leagues right now?
Gil, 3 weeks ago when we did this segment, in this spot, I said, you cut Juju Smith-Schuster. People apparently weren't listening. So since I told people to cut him, here's what he's done. 5 for 89, 5 for 46, last night, 3 for 33. No touchdowns the entire season, a bad drop last night. You didn't listen to me 3 weeks ago. You ought to listen to me today.
All right, now this one is interesting because it dovetails nicely into our previous conversation. One to claim. Who you got here?
Taysom Hill. I have been playing him at my wide receiver tight end flex the last 2 weeks because in Yahoo leagues and some other leagues, he is actually listed as a quarterback / tight end. That's how much of a joke the fantasy tight end position is that they list Taysom Hill as a tight end. So I played him 2 weeks ago. I thought he might get me a red zone rushing touchdown. He did. I pressed it this past week. He was the highest scoring player in fantasy football. He was only started in 9% of Yahoo leagues. I was one of those 9%. He's the number 3 tight end in fantasy football, according to Yahoo League, and he doesn't play tight end.
Yeah, I mean, you're right on this. You've always been right on this. I'm curious about this one. One to buy low, you have DJ Moore. Is this because of a quarterback change because Baker is out for a couple weeks, or is this because you think he might get unloaded?
Well, I'm wearing Carolina blue because DJ Moore wakes up this morning and it's like Christmas. Matt Rhule's been fired and Baker Mayfield is injured. It can't get any better for this. We all know DJ Moore is talented. He's currently wide receiver 47. Things can only get better for him, Gil, whether it's PJ Walker or whatever is going on offense, or he gets traded. He's been alleviated from Rhule and Mayfield.
See, this is the difference between fantasy and betting, because I have never been more sad with the Matt Rhule, Baker Mayfield, Kinyella. Never more sad. And then finally, one to sell high.
Let's sell Hollywood from the Arizona Cardinals. He's currently wide receiver 7 in my scoring settings for the season, but I don't think this is sustainable, Gil. Kyler Murray leads the NFL in attempts, so that can only go down. He's off 3 big games in a row, so you can sell that. He's against Seattle this week. You can sell that. Someone can get excited about it. And maybe that someone also doesn't realize DeAndre Hopkins returns next week. I think this is a great time to sell Hollywood Brown and get back RB1 value and maybe a wide receiver flex type player in exchange.
All right, real quick. I know we're talking about things you got right. How about Austin Eckler, though, Todd? He looked pretty good, and you didn't like him a couple weeks ago.
No, I didn't, and I surprised you with that. And you know what, Gil? I like to be accountable on this segment because I listen to you guys. I watch you guys, and I know in the past you guys have taken shots at other fantasy people who don't admit when they're wrong. I want to admit when I'm wrong in these segments, and I was wrong 2 weeks ago about Austin Eckler not being productive. Since then, he has as many touchdowns the last 2 weeks as Taysom Hill. Let's throw that in there as well. So, yes, Austin Eckler is up to running back 4 right now. I told you to sell high on him last week. Maybe he got a ton in return, but I was wrong.
All right, I appreciate that. And then finally, in the 30 seconds here on this, we talk about what do you do on a trade if you get a bad trade offer. Ghosting is one of the options you had that happened in your league this week.
Well, I don't like ghosting because I don't understand it. Gil, if you're going to make someone a trade offer and they don't like it, then click the box that says decline or reject trade. Don't ghost it like it's a bad one-night stand and you don't want to talk to the person. At least let everybody move on with their life. I've admonished owners in my league who look at a trade, don't like it, and then just don't respond to it. I don't like ghosting for any reason.
The kids love ghosting, Todd. I don't know what's with them, but I'm with you. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it as always. Todd Wright, everybody.
Gil.
By the way, your pro tip of the hour. We always talk about schedule analysis before the NFL season when it comes to win totals, but we rarely revisit it. We should. Make notes before the season and don't forget about them because it will help with in-season bets. That's your pro tip for the hour. We do one every hour on VSiN across every show, so that means at least 20 every day. They're all available for VSiN Pro subscribers only at VSiN.com, where you can sort them by sport and by show. Baseball with Mark Borchard next on A Numbers Game at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.